UN Nations Union, if they're both in terms of their own preference structure, in terms of the population size, and that's obviously very, very high priority right now in Europe and this. With no more delays, let me have Matt.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much for that flattering introduction. So it's a pleasure to be here. This is a joint project with Salvador Barbera, who actually is now dabbling in politics in the real world in the sense that he's Secretary General of Research and Education in Spain. So his life is changing quite dramatically. But this is a paper that we started as part of a longer-term project in trying to understand voting systems in situations where there's some sort of heterogeneity among the voting members. And in particular, what we're interested in here is indirect democracy. And there are many different applications of what we're thinking about here, which one of which will be to the voting system in the new Council of Ministers in the European Union under the new constitution and trying to understand how that should be structured. And that's how a lot of the conversations that we had about this project started. And actually, we'll go through some empirics of what the different options are and how one might support those. But more generally, the question is, if you do have a set of nations that are coming together and trying to make decisions collectively, or you have a set of states coming together in a federalist system who are making decisions on the part of their constituents, how should you structure that voting system? So given that in particular, these systems might be in situations where there are different size countries, different levels of homogeneity or heterogeneity among the voting members of each country. Some might be very homogeneous, some might be very heterogeneous. How should you take that into account in making sure that each country gets its fair share of the votes? So that's the basic question that we're looking at. If I can figure out how to use the... here we go. So the setting here is we've got this set of states or countries that are going to vote. And you know the really specific issue that we're looking at is how should we assign the number of representatives or the number of votes to each given entity, and in particular, how does this depend on the underlying structure of the countries themselves or the states themselves in terms of how much heterogeneity there are, how large the states or countries are. Going hand in hand with this question is also the issue of how large majority, qualified majority rule you might use. So for instance, right now, the Council of Ministers uses a threshold of 73.9% of the votes in order to pass a new legislation. So that's fairly high. It's almost three quarters. The new proposal under the new constitution is 60%, so they're going to lower that fairly dramatically. What's the reason, you know, why shouldn't it be 50? Why would you want 75%? Just trying to understand what the right setting is there. And you know, we'll look specifically at the Council of the European Union to try and understand what some of the theory might have to say about structuring of these things and make some comparisons across the Nice Treaty and the new constitution. Okay, so first of all, in terms of background, we're going to take one very specific approach in answering this question, and by means of background, I think we can talk just fairly fundamentally about what are the ideas behind democracy and which point of view are we going to take. And this is a very rough cut, but one could take two different points of views in terms of why one would want to think about democratic voting systems. And one is some sort of view of equity, that everybody should have equal rights or some sort of ability to have input into the decisions that are being made. And from this perspective, when people think about indirect democracy and sort of assigning weights to different groups, the fundamental point of view has been that you want to make sure that everybody has more or less an equal chance of being pivotal. So I should have the same chance of affecting the decision if I'm in Spain, for instance, as if I'm in Malta or Germany, etc.
Another point of view is more purely pragmatic, which would be to say that the reason that we're going through this process is in order to discover the preferences of the individuals, how they really feel about different things, and our ultimate goal is to make the choice which is welfare maximizing for the overall population, and we're using this system to discover the weights. And these two different points of view can be in conflict with each other. So giving everybody an equal say is not the same thing as trying to do the thing which is best overall for the welfare of the society. And so that's one thing that we want to make clear. And most of the previous literature has taken the equity point of view in trying to understand how you'd want to structure these things, giving everybody an equal probability of being pivotal. And what we're going to do is instead take a point of view which is more in line with maximizing the overall welfare, and we'll find that those two things can be in conflict, and they can give you different answers. Okay. So that's the point of view. And you know, this kind of approach has been taken before, more or less to try and rationalize why you'd want to use, say, a majority rule in a society. So Ray's work and Badger and Curtis and the people who followed up on justifying majority rule were using utilitarianism as a point of view. So that's the perspective we're going to take. And what we're going to do is we'll provide a simple characterization of the optimal weights. So how should you assign weights to different countries under this point of view of utilitarianism? And we'll show that this is going to differ from trying to treat people equally. We'll show that this issue of what weights you want to assign and how high you want to set the majority threshold, we'll show that these separate out. So there's sort of a nice intuition of how you want to set the threshold and how you want to set the weights. And those will have two different intuitions. And then we'll relate these weights to correlation. So in particular, how homogeneous or heterogeneous is a country, that's going to be the primary determinant of what the weight is going to be on that country. More homogeneous countries are actually going to get higher weights. More heterogeneous countries are going to get lower weights. And I'll try and explain that intuition as to why you would want to weight more homogeneous countries with a larger weight. And then we'll actually look directly at these voting rules for the European Council and try to understand what they're proposing, how you might rationalize those, and more or less it's going to boil down to whether you like the Constitution better than the Nice Treaty is going to depend on what some empirics are about the relative correlation structures in different countries. So I'll talk about that in particular. But one thing, let me just sort of mention from the output, if you have questions, feel free to ask questions as they come up, because I'm happy to sort of make sure that we cover everything as we go along. So don't feel free to interrupt at any point in time. Okay. So just a quick look at the related literature. Most of the analyses of these kinds of voting systems have been based on power indices going back to Shapley and Shubik, Bonzoff, and actually, you know, coming originally, I think Penrose was the first person to really talk seriously about how to structure these indirect democracies. And most of these are based on pivot calculations and trying to make sure that everybody has an equal possibility of affecting the outcome of the decision. And there have been various applications of this work to the European Union. There have been a lot of recent papers, sort of two different pushes in this. The first push was when the Nice Treaty was being written. The second push is actually coming right now. As the Constitution's been proposed, there's been a new set of empirical papers trying to figure out, what's the justification for these things. There's some power indices that have been based on measuring overall social welfare or some sort of utilitarian measure. There's, one by Dubé and Shapley. There's some work by Villaruel and Valenciano. Those
are more or less just trying to measure how well these things do rather than actually design, figure out what the optimal structure is. So the work we do is going to be a little different than what's been done in the literature. Okay, so let me, the other line of the talk is, what I'll do is I'll start with an example that will just give you a feeling for some of the things, some of the issues. It'll be a very simple example. Then I'll just present a quick model. It's a very simple model. And the basic intuition from that model about how you would structure voting rules if you were trying to maximize the overall welfare of the society. And then we'll specialize that model and apply it to the European Union. Okay, so that's the basic structure of what we're doing. Okay, so let me start with an example. And the sort of immediate idea that a lot of people will come up with without thinking very deeply about how you would structure these weights is just, let's make the weights proportional to the country. If a country's twice as big, we'll give it twice the weight. And you can imagine, so the first question is, you know, why don't we want to just give each country weights that are proportional to the size of their population? So this is an example just to sort of point out what the issues are and why doing that might not be the best idea. So imagine that there are three different states or countries, call them A, B, and C. Country C is three times as large as countries A and B. So there's three voters in country C, one voter in A, one voter in B. And we're just trying to make a simple decision between two alternatives. So we're voting over A and B. And let's think that the world is that I get a utility of 1, my payoff is 1 if you choose the thing I like, and minus 1 if you choose the thing that I don't like. Okay. So if we're thinking about the utilitarian perspective, what we'd like to do is just pick the alternative that's favored by the most number of people out of this. But the indirect democracy means that all we're going to see is a vote from each country. So from countries A and B, from their votes we'll be able to perfectly infer what's happening in that country. From country C, all we're going to see is a vote, so we'll just see that they voted for A or B, but we won't know exactly what the distribution of preferences is inside that country. And so what we're trying to do is more or less structure this rule to best take advantage of whatever information we can learn from that vote about how many people like that in country C. Okay. So when we look at this, let's think of two different worlds. In this world, you know, we could think of making the votes proportional to the country size, in which case the votes, the weights will be 1, 1, and 3. So here, country C gets 3 votes because they're 3 times as large. Effectively, that means that if country C favors something, that's going to be the decision. So if you do things proportional to the country, country C just dominates because of its size in this world. They get 3 votes. No matter what happens, they're going to dominate the outcome. The other possibility is that we don't let country C dominate things, and essentially we assign more equal votes. Okay? So the first would be the proportional system, and this would be a system that's less than proportional. And clearly here we're putting country C at a big disadvantage, but the idea is that here, you know, we're going to get 2 different outcomes, and let's try and understand what the possibilities are. Okay? So when we think about what happens in terms of outcomes here, country C is more or less making the decision. So if we think of the possible favorings of the different people in the society, when is the wrong decision from an overall utilitarian perspective made? Okay. So when is it that we're making the wrong decision? Well, we make the wrong decision when people in country A and B would like A, country C would vote for B, but overall there's at least 3 people in a total society that like A. Right? So what we're doing is, in a situation, for instance, where we have 2 people in country C liking B, but everybody else liking A, then the vote inside country C is going to be for the second alternative. And then the overall vote, their representative comes to represent their country, they vote for B, and so we get outcome B, even though the overall society likes A more than B.
Okay, so the fact that we're using indirect democracy means we're getting imperfect information and we're making a mistake here. So we can count up how many times the wrong decision is made under this system. And it's basically any time when you've got a majority inside country C favoring one alternative, but the overall majority going the other way. And that happens, you know, there's six different configurations where that happens in this world. Now we can also look at, suppose we had the weights that are less than proportional. So country C only gets one vote. In this case, the only chance that we make the wrong decision overall is when everybody in country C would like one decision, but because the other two countries support the other decision, country C gets outweighed. That's the only time we make the wrong decision in this world. So there's fewer chances of us making the wrong decision in this world here than there are in this other setting. Okay. So actually here, you know, setting country C's weight to be lower is actually better for the overall society in terms of the number of possibilities that we make the wrong decision. Okay. So this gives us some idea of sort of what the considerations are and what's going on behind the scenes. Does that make sense? Yes, of course.
Can you just have your cake and eat it too and have both? Can you just have double majority system, right?
We could try and set systems that are going to, involve. Here, you know, effectively, what we're doing is we have to set up some system that says, which coalitions are going to win. It's going to boil down to just saying, you know, if country B and C favor it, or it's going to be some list of which countries support which alternatives and when we make choices. No matter how we slice it here, there's always going to be some situations where we're going to end up making mistakes because we're not getting complete information. I mean, the optimal thing to do would be have direct democracy. Right? We have a vote of all the citizens over everything. And the problem is that effectively that's just too time-consuming and costly to do on a regular basis. And so the imperfect thing that we're starting with is this constraint that somehow we're not going to be able to always observe what everybody inside country C wants. We're just going to ask their representative. And we're going to have information lost. And so here, this is the best you can really do. Under this system, unless you're doing direct democracy, the any voting system you write down will make at least two errors. So I'm not sure any other system would do better than.
It's been a while since I've been through the EU, my memory was that the Germans, for example, fought particularly hard in the 1990s for basically double majorities, where you have to win both a majority of the state as well as a majority of the population.
And
again, have your cake and eat it too. If your argument is to avoid a wrong decision, wouldn't you just want to do both of these and say that nobody could win one game but not the other? You have to play both to avoid sort of the nested game problem where you win in C but lose in.
Now, so what will happen there is if you have to win both, what that's going to do is skew things away from the status quo and towards the status quo. So what will happen is if you have a system like that, you'll end up making more errors in terms of B's than A's.
So,
more or less what's going to happen is any way you do it, you're going to have some errors. But there are reasons for double majorities, and I think a lot of times the reason for double majority systems is not so much that you're interested in minimizing errors as you want to make sure that some countries have a lot of power, but that little countries don't get squashed. And so, the attempt is sort of to throw in the second constraint to make sure that the little countries still have say that they don't get completely voted against.
But even with double majority system, wrong decisions will still be made.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you work out the math? Okay.
Yeah. So it's actually the paper, I won't go through the paper actually gives the most efficient possible voting rule. So there is one, and I can talk about that a little bit at the end, but I don't want to go through the. I'll stick to the majority systems for this.
Just looking at trying to understand how these decisions are. This problem doesn't completely eliminate the integrated two-stage voting and last-stage voting.
Yes, exactly. So what we're doing is we're just assuming that there are constraints that mean that having votes over every decision you're going to make on a overall, you know, taking everything to be a referendum inside the European Union would just be too costly, and that it's more effective both in terms of having people gather information and become educated on what decisions to make, and in terms of just the overall cost of having votes, that there is an indirect democracy. So we're working inside an artificially constrained system, and within that, asking what the right thing to do is. And that's so we've got an inefficient constraint, but we think that that's due to costs. It would be, the other system would be too costly. Okay. Let me go right to the model.
So what we have is a set of countries, 1 through M. They're going to be making decisions that affect all of them. We've got some number of voters that live in each country, and I be the number of voters in country I. And we have these two alternatives, A and B. And let's think of B as the status quo. So we're trying, A is this new alternative that's come up, and we'll set a voting weight, and we'll say, you know, if there's enough votes for A, we'll pass A, otherwise we stick with B. And the question is, how many votes do we give to each country, and how high do we set the threshold? So that's a voting rule, is just number of votes for each country, and how many votes do we require to pass. In terms of preferences, basically all we need to do is keep track of, given that there's two alternatives, you know, what's the intensity of preference of a given voter for one alternative versus the other. So we just need to keep track of the differences. If we make one choice versus the other, how much is that going to affect that particular voter? So, we can keep track of one utility, the UJ if A is chosen, and minus UJ if B is chosen. So you can think of ones and minus ones. Okay, just think of plus one if I get my preferred alternative, minus one if I get the one she's back. So a state is just a list of utilities. So this would be, say, a list of plus ones and minus ones, where plus one means I want A minus one means I want B. So minus one means I get hurt by A. Okay.
The voter here are individuals really
in the countries.
C sub whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So what's going to happen is we have this set of underlying voters, and then we have a representative that's going to make a choice based for that country, and what we want to understand is what the actual preferences of the people behind the representative are, and try to infer those from the actions of the representative, more or less.
So what's happening is in the first stage, there's going to be some system by which each country's representative decides how to vote. So if people get their preferences over what these two alternatives are, do I want A or B? Now there's a representative of my country who's going to make a choice. And you could think of this happening in many ways. Maybe they take a poll. They ask the people in the country, what would you rather do, A or B? They could be a politician who's interested in being reelected, and they're making a choice that they think pleases the most people in the country. They could be a dictator who ignores the people in their country. So there's some system by which they make a decision. Okay?
And then they come together. In stage two, the representatives of each one of these countries, they meet and they vote.
Each country's representative gets some weight. So they get some weight in terms of their vote. Either, you know, in the previous example, it could be a 3 or a 1. And then there's some threshold. So how many votes in total do we need in order to pick A? If we pass the threshold, we choose A. If we don't, we choose B. If there's a tie, you flip a coin.
Okay, so if we hit the threshold right on the head, then we can flip a coin.
It doesn't really matter. So you can normalize this. You could make it one. You could make them so. You know, as long as the relative weights are constant, it doesn't matter whether we scale these up. We can call them hundreds. We can call them ones, thousands. So it doesn't really matter how we scale them.
It's relative power to country that matters. Yes.
So what we're here, we'll actually be agnostic on what happens in stage one.
So the characterization won't depend on that? I mean, it'll implicitly take that into account, but what's important is, I mean, as an example to keep in mind, imagine that what happens is each representative takes a poll in their country, so there's a vote inside their country of what alternative, and then they take that to the union and make a decision. Okay, so that think of that as the leading example. But yeah, they're a mechanical representative. So think of that system, and I can talk about generalizations of that. So the model easily generalizes, but that's a good thing to keep in mind as what's going on. Okay. So let me talk a little bit then about, let me think about, maybe I'll do this on the board here. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what these weights should look like and try and get the intuition out before we sort of state the main results. Okay. So let's think of what was going on inside of a country. Inside of a country, effectively, if I want to be maximizing the overall utility, what I'd like to be doing is really figuring out, if I see that Germany comes to the table and says, we want A, what I really want to do is think, well, inside Germany, it's probably not that everybody in Germany wants A. It might be 60-40, might be 70-30. If it's 50-50, then I'm not so concerned about whether I choose A or B. So even though they voted A, I realize if I choose A, you know, it makes them more or less indifferent. Overall, I make some of the people happy and some of the people unhappy. If they're 70-30, then I feel more of a reason to be choosing A because, you know, there's a big gap in terms of how many people. So what I'm doing and when I'm looking at Germany's vote is trying to infer how split is Germany. Okay? And with different country sizes, there, you begin to see that there could be different, you know, differences in terms of the number of different people taking different points of view. So when we thought about the country with three, a country with three, if they vote for A, it could be because they're AAA, it could be because they're AAB, BAA. ABA. Okay. So if there are any of these situations, they vote for A. So if I see a vote of A, I could say, well, there's a one-quarter chance that they're actually unanimously in favor of it. And there's a three-quarter chance that there's two people in favor of it and one person against it. So if I want to count the overall utility from A in terms of that country, well, the overall utility would be 3 in this case, but in these cases it would be 1, 1, minus 1, right? So this person's getting a minus 1 if I choose A. So the net utility to this country of choosing A in this case would just be 1. So these two citizens cancel each other out, and here we get a 1. So in terms of what I think about, you know, what's the value of giving A to this country, it's 1/4 chance times 3, and 3/4 chance times 1. So when you add this up, the overall expected value is 3/2. So the usual sort of incorrect reasoning that we usually go through is we see a vote by a country and we think, oh, well, Germany supports A. That means that 80 million people in Germany or 83 million people are supporting A. That's not the case, right? It's probably maybe 50 million support A. So this is doing the calculation of what do we back out from the fact that they voted for A. Yes.
How about those people who
don't have A? So in this model, we just assume that you know, people have plus or minus or you can do general distributions. If you have more general distributions where some people can have high preferences and so forth, all you're going to do is a more complicated calculation. But you could still do the expectation saying, look, knowing that some people, you know, that there's a farming block inside of Germany that has 20 million people and they really care about agricultural subsidies, then if I see something on agriculture coming up, maybe I give them a higher weight. So I could implicitly do calculations where I try and figure out, you know, how much do they care about different things and try and weight that. Or I think that they don't care at all about this particular policy. And so I weight them 0. Right. So if all these things were zeros, then I'd just say 0 everywhere. and I want to give them no weight.
Okay. For this population, because the rule, the key assumption is that the specimen has to be independent.
Right, for this particular calculation. And in general, what I'd like to do is, if I know what the distribution of preferences is, I can do a calculation, right? So if I think that, preferences are somehow correlated, then instead of one quarter here, maybe I'd run that up, right? So if I think that there's some correlation, I could put a higher weight here and a lower weight here. And what that's going to do is give me a higher number here, right? So you can begin to see as I change the correlation structure, I say it's more likely that they're unanimous, that Germany happens to be a very unanimous country, then I'm going to run that weight up. And then I'm going to come up with a higher weight here. So that's exactly the kind of thing I would do. And the interesting thing is if you go through these kinds of calculations, now if I have a country with 5 instead of 3, so now you know I've got a chance, well, they support A, it could be that everybody supports A. Now it's even rarer to see that. You know, it could be that 4 support A, and 1 supports B. Right, I've got a bunch of ways I could do that. It could be that 3 support A, and 2 support B. And when you go through these kinds of calculations, you know, there's one chance that this happens. There's actually 5 different ways that you could get, you know, a situation where 4 support A and 1 support B. There are 10 different situations that you could have where 3 support A and 2 support B. So now when I go through this calculation, I can say, well, here, this country gets a utility of 5 from A. Here, they get a utility of 4 from A. So a lot of this is it's 1/16 of the time it's here, 5/16, 10/16.
Second is
2. Right, exactly, sorry. 3, great. So I've got a net of 3. So I have 4 supporting A, 1 supporting B, so the net utility is 3, exactly, yeah. And here the net utility is only 1. So when I do this calculation, you know, here I have 3 halves. When I do this calculation, I've got 5 times 1/16, 3 times 5/16, 1 times 10/16. I actually did this somewhere. You're going to end up with 15 over 8 as the weight. So, is that the right weight? Yeah, 15 over 8. So this has gone up, but it didn't go up quite as proportionally as 5 over 3. So if you look at 15 over 8 compared to 3 over 2, that's not gone up as fast as 5 over 3 went up. So when you begin to do these calculations, the calculations don't go up as fast as the populations rise. So I don't want to go by weights of 3 to 5. I want to go by weights of what I really expect the utilities of. And the bigger the country, the closer, the more times you're going to be getting that things end up closer to even. And so larger countries, I don't want to be weighting proportionally to the population. I want to weight them less than proportionally. Okay? And what this graph does is do this calculation as you increase the number of people in the society.
You said that the decision rule inside the country, the aggregation preference for their delegate, could be anything.
Right.
And here it seems like you're assuming minimal majority rule.
Right, exactly. So these calculations are the weights that I would give to a country if that representative was doing the best possible job in terms of actually representing their country fairly. Now suppose that the representative isn't doing that. So suppose the representative actually does this and then, you know, has some other considerations that takes them away from this. Then I would even lower this weight further. Because there's more and more of a chance that actually maybe there's more bees in this country and somehow that representative is not acting in that person's interest. And if I have the extreme of a dictator where they're ignoring all this information, then I shouldn't infer anything from their vote, right? I realize that this is a dictator's vote and they have nothing to do with what their country really believes. In that case, the optimal thing to do is just ignore that person's vote altogether and give them a weight of 0. So you can begin, you know, through these kinds of calculations, what you're able to do is take into account both what the distribution of preferences is and how much when the person's voting, what do you infer from that? And that's effectively what you want to set its weights to be. Okay. So this is the theoretical weights for the case we are the representatives doing exactly the best possible job, and the voters inside are IID. And what you begin to see is it's not linear, it's, you know, it's scaling off. So actually this scales off more or less roughly like a square root function. And yes?
So you're saying that heterogeneous states tend to be, say, swing states, shouldn't get any electoral votes?
They shouldn't. They should get electoral votes, but they shouldn't get electoral votes that are, so you shouldn't get electoral votes that are disproportionately large in terms of, it shouldn't be that Ohio gets a lot more than Wyoming.
But if Ohio is going to be 51% versus 49%, that's not much of a difference.
Right, so you'd want to give them a vote of 2%, basically.
Yeah.
Right? So you want to figure out what that expected difference is, and that's more or less that expected difference is what you want to set the weights to be. Right? So you want to look at the country, at that state and say, you know, what do I really believe about how many more people supported one side than the other? That's the weight I want to stick to that state. And you know, the size of that weight. So still, Ohio gets a bigger weight than Wyoming just because a 2% swing in Ohio could be a lot more than a 70% swing in Wyoming. But I do want to weight those things by what I expect. That how many people do I think prefer one over the other based on that vote? Yeah.
How about your lattice model when you have more than two choices?
So we're... The optimal structure, you know, more or less what you need to do is have a voting system by which for every possible vote that you could have, you try to infer what the preferences of that constituency were. Right? So the idea is, look, how do I want to interpret a big given vote? If there's three candidates and I say that Ohio came out for candidate C, then what do I infer about the preferences of Ohio based on a vote for C? And I'd have to take that into account. So it'd be a much more complicated problem. But the intuition is that you know, what I'm trying to do is make the right inference given what I see in terms of a vote, and that's how I want to assign weights. But there would be a three weighted system, so it'd be a little more complicated.
It seems that the correlation is doing
Yes, exactly.
Right,
exactly. And that's what, so eventually the empirical problem is going to boil down to, if the world is one where things are almost IID, then you're going to get a world where you want weights that are much less than proportional. If the states were all perfectly correlated, so everybody, you know, Germany was perfectly homogeneous and Luxembourg was perfectly homogeneous and et cetera, then I would know that a vote by a country of three represents three, and a vote of a country of a five represents five. So then I'd want to assign a 3 to this country and a 5 to that country.
But the nice thing is that as long as it's not perfectly correlated,
then things become non-perfect. So to the extent that I think that there's a lot of correlation, I'm going to want to go more towards proportional weights. The extent that I think that there's more heterogeneity within a country, I want to go to less than proportional weights.
Yeah. Maybe this is just too practical question, but if you're going to set up a voting system that's going to deal with 8 different issues, and you expect the distribution of preference in each of the states to be different across the different issues, but I guess you can switch your weights on every
precisely. So what you'd like to do is you might have a different system for voting for security issues rather than voting for agricultural policy. And so if I think that somehow countries really look very different when it comes to different issues, then you would want to adjust the voting system for different issues. And you know, you can actually do that. So one thing that's nice is we have data on different countries. So you can look at polls within different countries, and one of the exercises we'll do is look at those data. You can see, you know, UK is very heterogeneous. Germany is less heterogeneous. And you can go across these things and see the different, and they're different, they vary on different policies. So France is much more uniform on agricultural policy than they are on defense policy. So you might want to up their weight in one. And you know, obviously this will be politically difficult to get through, adjusting the, but you know, this sort of tells us where you'd like to push in terms of where the optimum is, and then whether or not they get there is another question.
It's not a practical issue. I don't know whether it's if you were institutionalizing this, I mean, sort of flipping back and forth between the peer theory and the institutional analog, what would the institution look to judge heterogeneity versus homogeneity?
for an issue area in the country.
Yeah, so actually I can tell you that the data that we use is from the Eurobarometer. So the European Union has done a whole series of polls, what they do periodically, where they look at issues associated with the European Union, and they keep polling, and they ask the same questions within each country, and they've done this over time. So you have snapshots, you know, how each country splits on each issue, and then you get some idea of what the splits, you know, what are these actual, so you've got literally the list of what these votes were on each issue, country by country. And so based on those, you can actually just directly calculate the weights. Now, you know, obviously, you don't always have that kind of data.
Are you moving to a system that's very close to direct democracy?
Yeah. Right.
Essentially,
so
making redundant the role of the representative?
So what this is doing is saying, look, we're constrained to a system. What we'd like to do is direct democracy. We're faced with the fact that we just see the representatives' votes, but what we'd like to do is try and infer to the best extent that we can move back towards direct democracy from the indirect democracy. So it's basically saying, let's structure the indirect democracy system so that we get as close to direct democracy as possible. And what we're doing is saying, look, we won't see these votes. All we get to see is a representative voted for A. But what we're our best guess at that, at what we would do if we were a democracy, based on what the representative did, was that, you know, 3/4 of the time it's one of these situations, 1/4 of that. So we're going to infer that, you know, it's 3/2. So we're just going to make a guess. So we're making guesses because we're forced to, but we're really trying to do the direct democracy calculation. That's precisely what that means. Yeah. Yes.
I hate to ask you another practical layer. What about change of opinion?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you? Again, I'm thinking the institutional. Sorry, it's only political science, but the institutions pop to mind. Where, I mean, isn't part of democratic deliberation that you actually can convince maybe AAB to say, well, you know, people say, well, maybe I should actually do that. I mean, I'm thinking in terms of institutionalization, right? How would you actually make this work? And if preferences are frozen, then I suppose it's easy to shop them for people. There's a pretty sustained effort underway, right, to sort of get the Europeans to move away from CAP. It's so expensive, right? And so, can you see where I'm putting it? I mean, how would you accommodate the fact that you can actually have some change in the weighting over time, right? Change over time.
Right. So I guess
sort of push against the idea of sort of cutting up institutions into sectional voting.
Yeah, so there's sort of two separate issues. One is, would we like an institution that looks different than indirect democracy? So if at one point we think that the European Union has to come to some decision, and they're going to do so not by having general referenda, but by having votes of the Council of Ministers or some set of representatives from different countries, then we're faced with this problem regardless of whether it happens early or late. And all we can do is ask, at the time they vote, what should we be inferring about where we think their population's votes have converged to? Okay, and we could still do we'd still have to do these same calculations. If we think that there's some ability to move away from indirect democracy and that you know, maybe we can learn more through some other system, then we might want to structure things differently. But here we're sort of taking the constraint that sooner or later they have to come to a vote. And the real question comes down to, at the point where, you know, Germany stands up and says, okay, you know, we support having a foreign minister for the European Union, we want to think about what does "we support" mean inside Germany. And that might involve a long deliberation process where people have changed their minds inside Germany. And, you know, right now they're trying to ratify the Constitution, and you see, you know, people in Spain from, there's advertising from all over, you know, trying to get each country to support this. So there will be changes of minds and debate and deliberation. And what we want to think about is the snapshot of time right when that vote occurs.
Doesn't that still lead to the problem, though, that the preferences may change persuasion?
Yeah, sure. So what we're doing is, I think, we're just doing one simple exercise, which is saying, wait, let's do it at the point where we've got this. And I agree that there's a lot that we're sweeping under the rug. I think, you know, what this does point out is that that at least we want to take into consideration ideas that straight proportional systems might be bad. And we want to have some idea of how we want to weight things. And this gives us some feeling for that. And, you know, how much you want to weight it or so forth, is, you know, and how you might want to adjust these things. Okay. So let me go through... Let me go right to the core there. So let's think of a set of worlds. So think of a world where when we see the representative vote for B, we think that the utility is effectively the flip of what they would vote when they vote for A. Okay, so we think of countries as being unbiased in a world where when we see a vote for A, we get three halves. If we saw a vote for B, we'd see three Bs here, two Bs and an A. It would just be the flip of this picture. Okay? And then we'd have a minus three halves. We'd say that, you know, that B was the favored alternative. Okay? So that would be a situation where there's no bias. And a bias would be a situation where somehow we think that people... So if we think of B as being the status quo, when you actually look at numbers, it's often that people prefer the status quo to change. In a lot of situations, you'll get something more like two-thirds of the people prefer the status quo to change. So there's a higher probability that people prefer B to A. And that changes these calculations. These were done as if everything was half-half. You know, that I'm a half chance for A, a half chance for B. That's where we got the one-quarters and three-quarters. If I'm more in favor of B than A, then all these probabilities are going to change. So in a world that was, you know, equal probabilities of Bs and As, then what you want to do is you just look and you assign these weights to just this direct calculation that we just did. Let's look at what we expect the total utility to be in favor of A, given that they vote for A, and we'll send that to be the weight in country A. And then we'll set the threshold to be half of the total weights. So make it simple majority rule. If more people prefer B than A, we go B. If more people prefer A than B, we go A. So just straight down the middle majority. But we set those weights exactly as we did in these calculations of what we expect the utility to be given that the representative voted A. Okay. And you can see here, you know, this calculation here, if there's correlation, that's going to come out in this expectation. Right? So this captures all of what you'd want in terms of saying, look, I look at the country, I look at how they voted, what do I think that net difference is? That's what I want to set the weights to be. Now, in a situation where there's a bias, so that, for instance, we're more likely to like B than A, then when you go back to these calculations, then what you get is you get the same weights, but the threshold goes up by what this factor is. So if I'm K more times to like, you know, if my intensity preference for B over A is up by a factor of K, then I set this threshold up by a factor. So the idea is that the threshold depends on how the relative utility size for B versus A, sort of what the preference bias is in one direction, and the weights are determined by just what this expectation is.
Are you doing interpersonal comparisons of utility, or completely wrong?
Yes. Yeah. So this is a utilitarian perspective, and you know, necessarily we can't do that without doing interpersonal comparisons.
Yeah. It seems like a potential, but how do you credibly say, well, our country really feels strongly about that?
Yeah. So there's no credible way. So if you want to do it in a way where you got away from interpersonal comparisons, you could. I mean, there are different alternatives. One is just to say that we'll just count each person voting for A as a one. And voting for B is a minus one, and we won't account for any, even though somebody might care 10 times more, we're not going to be willing to make that comparison. Then it's a world where I just do ones and minus ones. And to the extent that I can take into account interpersonal comparisons, and I'm willing to, then I'm going to get it more complicated. So that you can just build into how you model these U's, whether you're willing to assign intensity or not. Right. So we're agnostic. I mean, we're taking a perspective of however you code those U's, we're going to use that. But you're right. I mean, you might be unwilling to make interpersonal comparisons. But the utilitarian perspective, the idea of really maximizing this overall value, more or less embodies that we're going to be willing to say that we'll assign numbers to people. And how you want to assign those numbers per se depends on how willing you are to judge intensity. Right. So if there's correlation among countries, you could add in, so the full system would actually be a list of all the votes. You could do all your, you could do a...
Let's assume you could do that whole country could vote for it, and then based on the outcome, and then figure out the weight. Would that be more efficient then?
Oh, sure. That's effectively direct democracy then, right? I mean, if I can actually observe votes inside every country. So the idea is here that, in general, the process is going to be much more imperfect than that. And we're just trying to make inferences about what the votes would be if we could observe all the votes of all the people in each country. But if you have all that information, you might as well use it directly. Sure. Okay. So now let's look at... So we want to actually take this to the data, and we want to look between these two extremes of where you're going to get proportional and where you're going to get less than proportional. So what we do is we look at a simple... A very simple model of correlation. So what's the simplest possible way you could bring correlation into this? What we do is we just assume that a given country is going to be divided into blocks of people. Okay? There's some number of blocks of people inside a country. And people inside a block think alike and vote alike. So the idea is that you might have rural farmers, urban skilled workers. You have these set of people, and they more or less vote similarly on similar issues. Now, obviously, that's a pretty extreme model, but it's one that begins to allow us to look at correlations. So in this case, the voters within a block think alike. Voters across blocks are basically IID, and we're just assigning utilities of plus one or minus one. So either you like A or you like B. So what we're trying to do now is look at a situation where we've got these different numbers of blocks within countries. So that's going to be one version. No, this will be a country with three blocks. The three different blocks could support A or they could support B. Okay, this is a country with five blocks. So now the question is, we can think of two different extremes. So one extreme would be a situation where every country actually has the same number of blocks. So if you look at Luxembourg, it looks like a miniature Germany. Maybe Germany has 80 different blocks that you could categorize it. Then Luxembourg has 80 different blocks. So it looks like a smaller version of the same situation, just scaled down in terms of population. Another extreme would be something you call the absolute block model, where what we think of as blocks maybe as being 1 million people. So Germany might have 83 blocks in it, and Luxembourg would have a fraction of a block. So Luxembourg is basically a homogeneous country that where they all think alike. They're very similar, and Germany has much more heterogeneity to it. Okay? So in this world, we've got larger countries are going to have more heterogeneity. In this world, they're basically, smaller versions of the, smaller copies of a larger situation. So there's the same amount of heterogeneity across countries. Okay. So the idea is, in this world, all countries look more or less the same, just scaled up or down, you're going to end up with proportional weights. In this world where smaller countries are more homogeneous, then when I see a small country vote for something, it looks more like one voter, and it looks like they're all unanimous. So if Luxembourg votes for something, I think, well, Luxembourg's usually pretty homogeneous, they all must support A. I'm going to give them a high weight. The whole population must like A. I see Germany, I think, well, there's about 80 different groups. Maybe it's 43 supported and 40 don't. So I'm going to give them a weight of 3. So there, Germany gets a much smaller weight compared to Luxembourg. Okay. So these are the two different extremes. And basically, when you go through these two different extremes, this model says proportional weights. The countries are just scaled up and down. And this absolute block model suggests something like this, where bigger countries have more blocks,
but not as much, you know, when you actually weight them, you want to weight them less than proportional to their size.
Okay. So we want to just look at these two different possibilities, and here we can ask an empirical question. Which of these is a better fit to the data? So what we do is, let me go through the, look at the European Union, so I'll go right to the data here. Here's the actual countries. This is the Nice Treaty. So the Nice Treaty, we have the countries listed here, Germany, population almost 83. Their votes are 29. UK's population is about 60. They get 29 votes. France gets 29 votes. Italy gets 29 votes. So there you can already see that there's a bunch of countries who have very different populations who are getting more or less the same votes. And then, boom, you go to Spain, they have about 40 million, they get 27 votes. Poland, 27. And you go down, you know, Malta and Luxembourg, about 500,000 each. They're getting some votes. And so we can say, okay, what does that system look like? So here, this is a non-proportional system. You know, Germany is more than 160 times the size of Luxembourg, and they've only got 29 votes compared to 4. So they're certainly not scaled up by the size of the countries. So the actual Nice Treaty weights are very non-proportional. And also the threshold is set up at 74%, which means they're giving a huge bias towards the status quo. So somehow they're really thinking that people like the status quo a lot more than they like the alternative. Now when you compare the weights, so what we actually have here is the Nice Treaty weights are this dark blue thing, so that you see that these weights go like this. So they're non-proportional. This would be the yellow blocks, are the yellow diamonds here are what you would get under straight proportional weights, okay? Which is what you would, if you believe the relative block model, that's the weights you assign. And the pink ones are what we get by fitting this model. Okay, so if you fit this model to the data, you basically get exactly what they did under Nice. So the R-squared is about 96%. So basically, it almost looks like they did this calculation. Now, you can be sure they didn't. who knows how they picked those weights. But more or less, you know, that would be what they would have done. If they had gone through this calculation, their weights almost match that exactly. There's a few outliers. Actually, Spain and Poland are pretty well favored. Germany is a little bit below where it should be. Malta and Luxembourg are a little bit above where they should be. So there's a few outliers, but more or less they're where they should be if they'd done this kind of calculation.
Are you sure that Salvador wasn't there?
Yeah.
Okay. The Spanish and Polish delegates did a pretty good job in the Nice Treaty. So when you look at what's being proposed under the Constitution has straight proportional weights. So the Constitution is suggesting this yellow line. Okay. And so what we can say is that the previous system seemed to say that they think that bigger countries are more heterogeneous and should be weighted less, that we're not, you know, that we're not, we should be sub-weighting them. And the new one seems to say that we think that all countries are just as homogeneous or heterogeneous, and we should just be weighting things proportionally. Okay. So the Constitution says that. Nice Treaty is suggesting something that's largely in line with this model. Now we can go to the data and say, well, what's the truth look like? Okay. So what we did is look at these Eurobarometer data. So we look at the polls conducted by the EU in a three-month period between October and December 2003. This was a series of questions where they asked, this was the first set of polls where they asked things across all 27 countries, so we can get data from all the countries. And they asked questions that were of a yes-no variety. And most of the questions that they asked were questions about foreign policy and security issues. Should they have a standing army for the European Union? Should they have a foreign minister? A whole series of different questions. And what we did is then look inside the data, and you can look inside these sort of yes-no votes and try to, we can just directly measure, you know, we can see these numbers, and for each one, then we can come up with what a theoretical weight should be based on what the numbers actually turned out to be. So country by country, we can figure out what the weights ought to be. And these are the weights. So the weights here don't look very nonlinear. They actually look pretty linear. So we were a little surprised by this. We expected the the countries we expected it to be that when you looked at Luxembourg, it didn't look like a miniature Germany. It looked more homogeneous than Germany. And so we expected, you know, Luxembourg's weight should be higher, Germany's weight should be lower. But in fact, it looks, the big outlier here is actually the UK. So this is the UK, which split very close to 50-50 on a lot of questions. So if they vote close to 50-50, then you want to give them a lower weight. So they're it's always, it seems that their country is much more divided or split and much more heterogeneous, whereas Germany ended up being much more homogeneous and swinging all towards yes or all towards no on given questions than you might expect. So if they're almost always AAAs, then you're going to end up giving them a higher weight. So they're getting a weight that's closer to their country size. So this was, we found a little bit surprising. And you can go through the actual numbers and the weights that you should get based on the poll data. The only real outliers, so Poland ends up being a little low. Bulgaria, there's a few countries that really ended up low here. But most of the countries ended up with these averages, yes minus no's being relatively high and relatively uniform across countries. So this suggests that actually based on this data, you would believe that the new constitution is actually a closer match to reality than having proportional weights than the Nice Treaty was having these less than proportional weights. So although the Nice Treaty fits the model very well, it suggests when you go to the data, that the data suggests that the model is that countries scale up to be fairly homogeneous, in which case you want to give weights which are closer to population size.
What do you mean by saying that the Nice Treaty is a better fit of the model? The model can be adjusted.
No, right. So, sorry, it's a better fit of the... So basically, when we look at these two different extremes, what we end up with is the Nice Treaty fits the absolute block model, where countries scale, larger countries are more heterogeneous, and the Constitution fits this relative block model, where basically countries are identical but just scaled up or down. So what it seems to say is when we look at the model has these two different extremes, and Nice fits one extreme, the Constitution fits the other extreme, and when you go to the data, it looks like the Constitution extreme is the right extreme of the model. Right. So the model fits both. Right. Yes?
Simply an observation. The two slides ago with the diamond
right.
Each of those diamonds, of course, is one member of the EU. Right,
right. Right.
Okay. And the main remark being that appears to be an essential linearity there.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if sort of variation around straight linearity seems to increase with population size. So, possibilities of heteroscedasticity.
Yes.
Suggesting that there's still something, still some wonder in that time that's associated with population size.
Yeah. No, that's true, and you would expect heteroscedasticity here because what's going to happen is when we're measuring these errors, when you look at the size of the standard deviation country by country, larger countries are going to have larger standard deviations. Okay. So you are going to expect that the error terms here are not independent of the size of the country, but are, small countries by definition can only vary between 0 and 0.5 million. Germany could go from 0 to 80 million. So the possible variation there is going to be larger. So actually running a regression, you have to worry about heteroscedasticity here. And in fact, that's, indeed what you're seeing is you're seeing more variation among the larger countries, And it's just, the fact that they can split, the vote split can be much larger on a larger country.
You can model the variation correctly because you have this reason why they should.
Yeah.
Variance
Yeah. And so here you can, you know, based on the different models, you can figure out what the heteroscedastic, well, you can figure out the variance of the error terms, and you can incorporate that if you want to do diagnostics on these regressions. Yeah, so you've got the, directly from the model, you can infer all those things. So that's a good point, Beth. Yes. So a few caveats about the data. I mean, we wouldn't want to base the Constitution, you know, say the Constitution's better, the Nice Treaty's better based on looking at this. The poll data, you know, first of all, were the questions designed to make the EU look good? You know, a lot of the questions are really loaded one way or the other. So you'd want to have some sort of more systematic look at the questions. A lot of these are poll data, so you're not sure how people would actually vote. You know, polls are inherently noisy, so I'm not sure that that's great. The questions are remarkably uniform in answers. So they have a whole series of questions that might be asking the same question from a different point of view. So you're getting some repetition in the question. So, you know, looking at this poll data was just an attempt to sort of say, look, you could do this exercise, but I'm not sure that that's the data that I would want to, those are the data that I'd want to hang my hat on. So, you know, this isn't the recommendation for the Constitution. It's just saying that, you know, it's possible to do this kind of analysis. So in terms of conclusions, these efficient weights turn out to be proportional to this implied total utility of a country's voters. So we want to look inside a country's vote and ask what that tells us about the total utility. The threshold depends on the bias between alternatives. If there's a big bias for status quo, we've set the threshold higher. More homogeneous countries should get larger weights proportionally in terms of population. And, you know, these efficient weights can actually be a little bit unfair. We saw that in that first example. So if in a country where if we're giving one vote to country A, one vote to country B, and one vote to country C, I don't want to live in country C because, you know, if I'm in country A or B, I get a full vote in the end. In country C, I mean, I'm one-third of my vote is essentially counted. So this system can be very unfair. And when you compare it back to the systems that are based on making sure everybody has the same paper probability, this is going to give a different answer. So it could be that larger countries, you know, if I live in Germany and we get a smaller than proportional weight, I don't get weighed as much as somebody in Luxembourg or Malta. So individuals on an individual level don't do as well, but overall, this is better from maximizing the total utilities perspective. So there, you know, there's sort of conflicting, there's a conflict there that, you know, you have to take a stand on which way you want to do things. So that's more or less.
How about the voting rule going from 73.7 to 16? Could it be related, even though in the theoretical characterization you said that the voting rule depends on the status quo bias and the weights depend on the degree of heterogeneity or homogeneity, so they're kind of separate. But presumably, when they move from the history to the constitution, have certain weights, and the weights fit better the relative block model, that there could be some correlation, at least in the. So at least that's the way I've understood some.
Yes.
That because you give the bigger countries larger weight because it becomes homogeneous, then you reduce the threshold in order to still give some chance to the large coalition of small players to.
Right. So if you start to think of systems where you don't only care about the total utility, but you also care a little bit about equality in terms of opportunities of votes counting, then as you begin to move more towards a straight proportional system, you might want to change the threshold to make sure that
Is that your interpretation of what went
on? No. Actually, my interpretation is something different. I would think that what actually, when the European Union first formed, there were two things. One, it was more fragile. And two, so you wanted to make it harder for new rules to be imposed beyond the initial agreement. And so you want to move more towards a unanimous system. You want to make sure that things are done by complete consent in a situation where you were just starting out. And secondly, it might be that the big issues that were initially started were issues where there'd be more of a bias towards the status quo. So you wanted to be really careful about how you set up the euro. Now when you're starting to talk about issues of, you know, that are, you know, changes in tax or immigration, those issues are a little less of a bias towards the status quo. So I think as the issues have changed over time, it might be that you want to move away from unanimity, and there might be less intensity of preference over these things, and you might be willing to just lower that threshold. And ultimately, you might want to go to 50% in the limit when it becomes a point of view where each question is sort of more or less a heads tails kind of question.
If your system were put in place, where would you be most worried about
manipulations? So one thing we don't talk about at all here is abilities of countries to form coalitions and affect the voting. And so, for instance, when you use non-proportional systems, it can be a few of the smaller countries have a lot more power in terms of building coalitions than they do in a system that's very proportional. So I think it's sort of, you know, one thing we haven't done here is think about coalitional politics among countries. And if you begin to think about countries forming voting blocks and then beginning to trade votes within themselves, that can be a system, that can be something that you really might change your view of how you want to set this up.
Worried about that level than, say, the level of how
polls
are used, how
weights
are determined.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue would be that there's a lot of, there would probably be a lot of vote trading over time between countries, where France would get together with somebody and say, look, you support agricultural policy and we'll support immigration policy. And so they'll trade votes on that, and that'll make it more difficult to get to lower agricultural subsidies. And that would be the kind of thing I would worry about more than anything else. And we haven't covered it at all.
I have a question that sort of intuitively comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that enormity level, the enormity underneath this, the normative level, is the notion that the issues we're discussing, A and B attitudes, are distributed sort of across the population? So if we're talking about abortion, or repair in school, those kind of agricultural, environmental issues. On the other hand, we're thinking about distributive policies the EU might make that are going to create agricultural barriers for French farmers. Mm-hmm. It's likely there will be a lot of homogeneity in France. Right. Or if you're going to talk about educational subsidies to Germany,
yes.
Coming back to my cross issue, I could agree with your sort of intuitive inclination towards get as close to representative democracy, direct democracy as you could, if we assume the issues on the table are going to have kind of a normal distribution of A's and B's. But if what we're really talking about is things that affect state populations in quite predictable ways, for Indian best in self-interest, then it might predict a lot of homogeneity, or at least equal homogeneity across.
Right. And that equal homogeneity pushes you more and more towards proportional
systems.
Exactly. So if you really think
like what they're headed for.
That's exactly what they're headed towards. And when you look at the poll data, you see more homogeneity. So the system here.
It depends on what kind of issues are they going to be deciding.
Yes, exactly.
In whatever council this system is going to structure.
And I think that one, a very crude cut at that would be to say, let's think of where the systems where these things are going to be randomly coming up A's or B's. It's more likely, say, security issues, issues where it's you looking outwards.
Yeah. And situations. EU is your unit of intellectual analysis.
Right. And situations where there's more likely to be this kind of homogeneity might be more issues that are brought up inside the agenda internally, right? That France, supporters proposes a bill to say, we want to make sure that we allow. In spite of free trade agreements, we want to allow French tariffs on incoming goods. We're going to put that bill up. And a bunch of other producers are going to oppose it, and France is going to be unanimous in supporting it. So you could imagine that certain kinds of bills that are going to come up internally might be ones that you would want more of this proportional system, and ones that sort of are popping up. If it's security issues, we think that whether or not the EU should be involved in Iraq, or whether it should be involved in Iran, or whether it should take a stand on Korea, or something like that, might be things that are more exogenous to the EU, and more things where there's going to be different support for it or against it, but that are going to come up IID across countries. And that might be, so you might want to set two different systems for security issues.
The other thing you talked about that I see in the United Nations system is the relationship between the voting and the resource extraction that the organization does from each of its members. So that, you know,
viable.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, if let's take the security question, where we might be moving more towards your weighted voting system, if your intuition is correct. But let's just, for instance, assume that, well, maybe in the EU, the military force comes very disproportionately from Britain and Germany. Is it fair then, in the sense that they're being taxed, they have to provide all the resources here, but they only have, you know, a actually reduced weight?
Yeah, that's a good question, and maybe we that doesn't directly enter anything we do, so I'm not sure how you would begin to take that
into account.
Yeah, I guess that you'd have to say somehow that you think Germany cares more, or maybe how much you're willing to pay up front somehow is related to this intensity, and then you say, okay, look, we think that they might just be, maybe there are only 15 aides, but we think that one of their aides counts twice as much as another country, so we're going to double their weight. So you just say, okay, look, we'll weight their utility twice as much because they paid twice as much. So you could begin to do factor adjustments based on that and account for it in intensity. But you have to somehow assume that intensity is related to it.
Now, in the Nice Treaty, there were different voting rules for different issues, like the 60 or 70 different types of voting. I haven't checked on the Constitution how many...
The Constitution, at least in terms of the Council, so the main application of this, it's much more uniform.
Much more uniform.
Yeah, so they... I think they tried to streamline things, which this would suggest they shouldn't have done, but I think that, you know, you could do that for other reasons. You just want a more simplistic...
I think last of all,
we're way over time, so we should... Sorry.
So we started late, so I let the discussion go without a break, but I guess it's a good time to thank our speaker and everybody else for being here, and whoever wants to stay after the applause, and we are definitely staying here.
It makes it difficult for any group of countries to defend, any group of countries to, make it easier for any group to defeat them. So if you somehow think that what's happening is that things are changing in terms of how much it affects one country versus another, then adjusting by weight means that I can really tailor it and say, I think, France cares a lot more on agricultural policy, so I give them a bigger weight on agriculture, Spain more on immigration policy because their workers are more focused on immigration. So I'll make those adjustments. If I just change the threshold on these things, all I do is make it harder or easier overall to pass them, which is, might or might not, depends, if the bill is for it, So France, sometimes I want to favor them, but sometimes I want to make it easier, sometimes I want to make it harder to pass. But I want to make it easier to pass things when they support it and harder when they don't, right? And if I just do the threshold, I can't control that. But if I change the weight, I just say, okay, France is more of a state. So when they like stuff, they want to pass more of it. When they don't like stuff, they want to pass less of it.
I guess
But it could be that France actually supports the change, in which case you want to make sure. So if it was just one way, then you're doing the threshold the right thing.
Okay. But the fact that they might care in either direction, that I actually have to give them more say, they're better off than if I just put it in the threshold.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.